Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
He put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field, but while everybody was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds, among the wheat, and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And then the slaves of the householder came and said to him, "Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where then did these weeds come from?" He answered, "An enemy has done this." The slave said to him, "Then do you want us to go and gather them?" But he replied, "No, for in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let both of them grow together until the harvest, and at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, 'Collect the weeds first, bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'"
I swam against the tide, I tripped on my own pride, so I'll try again today to get out of my own way. The face was always in the stone, said Michelangelo. You just have to chip and clear to see what is already there. There it is, just below the surface of things, in a flash of blue and the turning of wings. I drain the glass, drink it down, every moment of this, every little bit of it.
Our second weed of a series concentrated on giving up certainty for Lent. So naturally, we are focused on the parables, those little stories Jesus told that confounded the disciples over and over again, and that continue today to open us up to God's mystery. Last week, Linda preached on the parable of the yeast. This week, as you just heard, I'm preaching on the parable of the weeds. And next week, we'll take on the parable of the 10 virgins, a name which in itself blows my mind. But when I saw that Matt and Linda had assigned me this parable, I thought they must be mad at me. First, it's a tongue twister. I have to kind of distinguish weeds and wheat. But second, growing up in a conservative evangelical church, I was haunted by this parable. Maybe some of you were too. This was the get right with God parable. The sermons I heard convinced me that Jesus was something like this. The preacher would back this up with a cheery image from Revelations 14. "Then I looked, and there was a white cloud, and seated on the cloud was one like the Son of Man, with a golden crown on his head and a sharp sickle in his hand. Another angel came out of the temple, calling with a loud voice to the one who sat on the cloud, 'Use your sickle and reap, for the hour to reap has come, because the harvest of the earth is fully ripe.' So the one who sat on the cloud swung his sickle over the earth, and the earth was reaped." The grim Jesus was coming back to harvest the wheat and burn the weeds. That's terrifying. As my understanding of this parable deepened, I started comprehending Jesus more like this. He knows when you've been sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Sounds more like the grim Santa Jesus is making a list and checking it twice, and he's got presents for some and the fires of hell for others. My pastor would wrap this up in a neat little bundle of certainty. The good folks need to wait out this life with the bad folks, but the bad folks, the sinners, will be punished appropriately in the end. But if we apply this understanding of the wheat and weeds to the rest of Jesus' ministry, things get a little confusing. Because according to this absolute understanding that neatly categorizes good people as wheat and sinners as weeds, we start to realize that Jesus mostly invited weeds to his table. In fact, he washed weeds' feet. If we look a little bit before this parable, we see in chapter 9 of Matthew, which Ryan will put up right now, we'll see in chapter 9 of Matthew that the whole ministry of Jesus is actually to these supposed weeds. Jesus didn't seem to be buying into these neat groupings of people, into piles of good and evil. Actually, if we look a little closer, this parable opens us up to the blurry lines between wheat and weeds. In the original Greek, weeds is translated as Zizanian, and that's called darnel today. This is what darnel looks up close, looks like up close when it's a baby plant. And this is what wheat looks like up close. And can we see those two together? They look fairly alike. And wheat and darnel also look a lot alike when they're growing. Can we see the next slide? It's a little dark, but they look pretty much the same. It might seem easy to sort out when they're isolated like this, but imagine a whole field of these plants together like this. I can't imagine the sigh of relief that went through those workers when the farmer was like, "Don't worry about it." When they go to seed, though, the next image, Ryan? You can see the distinct pattern in the two plants. Whereas the wheat moves up in a straight line, the darnel splits off into side-to-side pieces. When the wheat has gone yellow and is ready to harvest, the darnel is still green and never turns that beautiful gold color, but that gritty brown color up there. Come the harvest, it's easy to tell which is which. Maybe that's why the farmer tells the workers, "Let both of them grow together until the harvest." The original Greek verb in that verse is aphiemi, which is translated as let. This is also the same verb that is used in the prayer that we say together whenever we take communion, in the line, "Forgive us our trespasses as we, aphiemen, forgive those who trespass against us." Aphiemi also means to forgive. Not only should we let the weeds be, but we are called to forgive them. Wait, is Jesus saying that we need to let bad people and their behavior go unchecked? Not exactly. Jesus is asking us to have patience, to wait before we rashly tear out the weeds, or what we think might be weeds. Right before the farmer asks the workers to forgive those bad seeds and let them be, he says, "In gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them." I'm not so sure he's worried about tangled roots, so much as his workers not being able to tell the difference between the two. It's not always so easy to sort out the wheat and weeds in the fields of our own lives either. I wonder, do you know where your shirt was made? Do you know the conditions of the factory in which it was made? Did you drive here today? I don't know where my shirt was made, or by whom, or how. And yes, I drove here today. From Berkeley, by myself no less, when I could have taken a train. Instead, I pumped more carbon dioxide into an already choking atmosphere. Because honestly, I'm a broke seminarian, and I live off of thousands of dollars in student loans every year. And gas is actually a lot cheaper than the train. So I drive, and I buy clothes that are affordable. And fair trade clothes usually aren't. The clothes I'm wearing may well have been made by young workers who work 15 hours a day. I commit sin all the time, and I don't know how not to without going off the grid or chaining myself to a gas pump somewhere or contorting my life in some other way. Even when we think that we're being essentially good, wheat-like people, we contribute to systems of sin in ways that we can't possibly know. Does that make us weeds? I don't know. It's hard to tell. Can we really identify Darnell patterns in individual people? Can't we see it in murderers, drug dealers? Jesuit priest Gregory Boyle would say no. He founded an organization in Los Angeles called Homeboys Industries that works to help gangbangers, some of them convicted murderers, many of them violent criminals. He helps them get out of the violent gang life, find jobs, and discover what he calls the resilience that arrives in the moment they discover their own unshakable goodness. Let's check out some of these folks who have come through Homeboy.
I used to see my cousins, and I used to see them down the street where I used to live at, you know, doing crazy stuff. Something inside me told me that I wanted to do the same thing, and I ended up, I became a gang member.
I was raised in foster homes. I was abused when I was little. My family's gang-related. At age 10, I got arrested, so it's like I know what it is to be a gang member.
I used to carry a gun, you know, like, for me, it was, like, fun, you know, just carry and shoot people. I wanted to kick back with friends, you know, and so that was the closest friends that I found, you know.
What we do here, we actually remove tattoos to anybody from anywhere in the United States.
They start to come to a place where they say, I don't want my kid to see this.
Just for the other gang members could fear me, you know. I shot up a house, and they're gonna give me 12 years of prison.
When I was little, I wanted to be a pediatrician. My stepmom used to tell me, you can never be a pediatrician. She would tell me that all the time, and I'm like, okay, I can't be that then. I can't be that, I'm not gonna be it.
When I got out of prison, that's when I got shot. Man, I'm in a wheelchair, you know, like, I'm handicapped, I can't even work, man, I can't do nothing.
Well, Homeboy helped me with a lot, like getting my job, getting me off probation. Well, it helped me a lot.
I was happy when I got my first check, you know? I went and buy me some clothes. Quick, you know, to this day it makes me feel good, you know, buying my own stuff, you know.
You know, now I'm seeing that life is way better, you know, way better of me, you know, straining out, you know, it's even more easier for me now, you know.
No kid is seeking anything when he or she joins a gang. They're really fleeing something. And we've had members from nearly 600 gangs from all over LA County show up here to get help and support and tattoos removed and jobs.
We went to the White House. You know, it was great because I was actually drinking white wine in there, you know, holding a cup like this, you know, it was pretty good, you know.
I did something bad. Something bad's going to come up to me, you know. I would have found a better job, you know, and I would have a family already by this time.
Change for your mom and your family. Why don't you stop doing what you're doing? Think about your kids. Just do good for your kids.
It probably was meant for me to go through this little wrong turn, you know. And I would have never met my wife, my kids. I would have never had my kids. Just let them know, you know, that gang banging is not nowhere to go, you know. It's just a waste of time, you know.
So were these folks born weeds and then made into wheat by a Catholic priest? No. G-Dog, as the homies call him, believes in the unshakable goodness of every person who walks through his doors. I don't think he buys the idea that some people are weeds and others are wheat. It kind of seems like he thinks every person is a child of God. But how can we possibly say that when people do such horrible stuff to each other? It's true. We do. We. All of us. We can't help but do it every time we drive a car. Some of us shoot up houses. Others of us ignore the underlying issues of racism and poverty that make it so shooting up houses is the only way a person thinks that they have a voice in this world. Robert Farrar Capon, who Linda referred to many times, this is a book, writes about this parable. Since good and evil in this world commonly inhabit not only the same field, but even the same individual human beings, since that is, there are no unqualified good guys any more than there are any unqualified bad guys, the only result of a truly dedicated campaign to get rid of evil will be the abolition of literally everybody. To uproot the weeds, as the farmer said, is to uproot the wheat. A vast gray area of the spectrum of wheat to weeds fills our days, our reactions, the way we live. Last week, Linda talked about the kingdom of God being the yeast, ever present in the world and waiting for us to knead so that the heat of our lives will make the world rise. In this parable, though, I think the kingdom might be the earth, the dirt, the ashes of which we are made and to which we will return. We are reminded of this at the start of our Lenten journey every year. The kingdom was before us and will be after us, and it is from the kingdom, the soil, that we have taken our own temporary form. No, literally, think about what you eat. First, unless you're gluten intolerant, I'm guessing you eat quite a bit of wheat-based food. Bread, pasta, cereal, stuff that comes from the soil. You probably supplement with fruits and veggies. And even if you don't, we will say that you do. Those fruits and veggies grow straight out of the soil. Meat eaters, your cows munch on the grass that comes out of the soil. Your chickens peck on just about anything that lies on the soil or comes out of the soil. We are literally made from the soil, kingdom people. The enemy might have spread some bad seed, but God says, "Aphiemi, forgive, let it go. God will take care of it." But what is this bad seed anyway? If it's not the bad people in the world, what is it? Capon tells us that the Greek word used is sperma, seed. When the Bible uses sperma, like sperma Abram, the seed of Abraham, it's not talking about Abraham's sperm, his literal seed, but his descendants. What flowers from the seed rather than the seed itself. So when we say, "That guy's a bad seed," we're referring to his character and his actions, not to his origins in the womb. The disciples had a tough time grasping all of this too. A few verses after the parable, they asked Jesus to explain. And he does, saying, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels." The word sperma is used here too. Maybe Jesus isn't describing particular people bad from their very origins, because their origins are the soil, the kingdom. Maybe he's describing the characteristics and actions that flower from bad seed. Those are the children of that seed. Capon goes on to say, "The enemy has no power against goodness in and of itself. The wheat is in the field, the kingdom is in the world, and there is not a thing he can do about any of it. Evil, like Darnell, is a counterfeit of reality, not reality itself." So the bad seeds are the thoughts and ideas planted that flower into fear and anxiety about the unknown. They cause desperate kids to join gangs and carry guns. They cause us to turn our backs on those kids. But Jesus has good news. Let both of them grow together until the harvest. That word, aphiemi, again. "Forgive. I have plans," he says. "For I have come to call not the righteous, but sinners." This isn't saying that he's sweeping the righteous to the side. But really, who's righteous? We all have our weeds. But Jesus is saying that he's come with love and forgiveness to transform, to turn death into resurrection and life, weeds into wheat. We're growing from kingdom soil. Within our life, many of our weeds won't be rooted out, but transformed. But there are some weeds that haunt us throughout our life. Maybe deep-seated anger from a long-ago hurt. Maybe permeating anxiety from an incomprehensible tragedy. The scars imprinted on us during our darkest moments. Those moments that sometimes drive us to act in ways we later regret. And there are some weeds that are greater than our individual selves. Racism, homophobia, sexism, poverty. Weeds that have grown into the cracks of society's foundation. Weeds that cannot be individually transformed. In Jesus' explanation to the disciples, he says, "The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire." How have those evildoers, that anger or anxiety, that hate or poverty, how have those things affected your life and the lives of the people that you love? Who wouldn't want to throw those into the fire? This is a harvest of hope. Last fall, we did a series on heaven, the Basileia, the kingdom. Does anybody remember that? During those weeks, we learned about the already and the not yet of the kingdom. The kingdom is already present here and now in the soil, nurturing our lives, manifesting the transformation of weeds into wheat every day. In the kingdom of not yet, we await the harvest when those lingering weeds that haunt our lives will be gone forever. Transformation happens, already and not yet. Somehow, God knows. German theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote, "The only way to overcome evil is to let it run itself to a standstill because it does not find the resistance it is looking for. Resistance merely creates further evil and adds fuel to the flames." This is the essence of a fiemi. By this, he did not mean standing idly aside and letting the weeds grow wild. Bonhoeffer was a dissident who opposed the Nazis, and he lost his life because of it. He was a man of action. What he meant is that we are called to be kingdom people, to stop trying to sort the weeds from the wheat in our lives and to just live into our own wheatness, even if we don't know how that will transform the weeds. Jesus is our wheat example. He said, "Love your enemy," because he knew the transformative power of radical love to turn the weeds into wheat. He embodied that love. He did not ever stop showing that love. Even as his disciples betrayed him, even as an empire condemned him, even as he hung on a cross, even when he seemed surrounded by weeds, he lived as wheat in this world. We are not called to his same suffering, but we are called to his same radical love and its power to transform. Even when the weeds, our anger, our insecurity, our fear of others because of what they look like or who they love, even when those seem to be taking everything over, we are called not to see people as weeds or wheat, black or white. We are called to that uncertainty of not knowing what God's plan is for ourselves or for anybody else, but to trust that it culminates in a harvest of love.
By the grace of the Lord, I've come a long way. By the grace of the Lord, I've come a long way. He's been my bread when I was hungry. He's been my company keeper every time I get a little lonely. By the grace of